up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to this edition of the Rogues Gallery, a special edition. Today, we are having a conversation about the Supergirl pilots, which has been leaked online. And probably for a lot of people, it's already been out there that you can see. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for joining us here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. My name is Jason Hunt. The clattering you hear in the background is Mr. Timothy Harvey, probably feeding
his
cat.
Hello.
Also on the line from Corpus Christi, Texas, Sonia Rodriguez.
Hello.
And from Fort Worth, Texas, Mr. Jeff Hackworth.
Howdy, howdy.
Coming from across the city lines, somewhere out there, Mr. Christopher Jensen.
Evening.
And here in the studio joining me, Mr. Dan Handley.
Hello.
Did I miss anybody? I think I got everybody. All right. So,
you missed yourself.
I missed my... No, I think I introduced myself, didn't I? I'm George. Kendall Sand has an event this time around, so he is not available, and the mascot dog is wandering around the floor here, so I'm sure we'll hear from him at some point in the evening. Okay, so the Supergirl pilot. Let me set the table for this, because when we first got word that there was going to be a Supergirl pilot, everybody was, oh, it's good, this is so excited. And then the six-minute first look came out from CBS, and everybody went, ew, it's going to be Alec McBeal with a cape. Ew. Yeah. And Mr. Harvey and I, of course, discussed it a little bit because he and I have seen David Kelly's Wonder Woman pilot.
Right.
Which was terrible.
It was not good.
Tim's being generous. But the idea...
Adrian Pilecki was good.
Yeah, she...
Everything else was terrible.
Yeah, she did the best she could with what she had to work
with,
material-wise. And it's funny because... and I don't know if I should even say this or not. Carrie Elwes was here in March for Planet Comic Con. Mm-hmm. And I moderated his panel Q&A at the weekend. And backstage, before we went on, we were talking about various different things that we could discuss and things he wanted to talk about. He'd just done a book about the making of Princess Bride and all of these different things.
Called As You Wish.
I think it is.
Yes.
And I was asking him, Princess Bride, of course, and we'll talk about Robin Hood Men in Tights. And mm-hmm. I said, what about Wonder Woman? Do you want to talk about that? He says, no. And he completely shut down at that point. He was very animated and everything, very, very gracious, and everything was great. And as soon as I mentioned Wonder Woman, he just closed up.
Did you talk about Hot Shots?
and then he turned around and he said, have you got a pen and a paper? I'll write some stuff down and you can use it. He basically gave me the questions that we could ask in the panel. So
avoid Wonder Woman.
Yeah. So Wonder Woman is not a good topic, and it's also not based on the 6-minute piece that CBS put out. It is a fair comparison because the way that CBS put this thing together with the pinky 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 music. It was all set up to feel like a rom-com. It was mm-hmm. Sex in the City with a cape and Ally McBeal and those kind of shows. And hardcore fans, of course, were sitting there going, what? because it's Greg Berlanti. He's already got a track record with Arrow and The Flash, and we're looking at it going, yeah, he's got it. He understands. And then we see this thing, it's like, what is this?
Well, Ally McBeal is her boss on the show.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah, that was another thing. Everybody went, Calista Flockhart playing Cat Grant? What? Because Cat Grant, for those of you who are just catching up to the DC Comics world, like Brianna there, Cat Grant has always been the socialite. She's always been the sexy one, the blonde bombshell type of character in the DC universe. And Calista Flockhart doesn't quite fit that type. But we'll get to that in a minute in terms of her performance in the show. So going into this six-minute thing, everybody was feeling really wary because some of the action sequences looked okay, but everything else didn't. So now we get to the pilot. The pilot's out there online. Word gets out on the internet. Oh, the pilot's out. Supergirl pilot's out. So people start watching it. We got a hold of it. So now I want to discuss what we saw. And I'm going to open the floor. Everybody just jump in whenever you feel like saying something or somebody says something you don't like. You can jump in. It's free-for-all. And go.
And well, I would probably start off by saying I thought it was actually a pretty solid episode. They did a very good job with it. There were a couple of weak points in it, but you got to look at that they're still trying to set things up, being it's the pilot. So
I was extremely apprehensive when I heard that it was on CBS to begin with. I'm not a huge fan of genre shows on major networks because they tend to water them down. So the minute I hit play on the pilot, I was definitely cringing a bit. But I have to agree with Dan. I was pleasantly surprised. It was solid show. The biggest challenge I think any of those shows have is in less than 45 minutes, they've got to make me care about characters. And they did.
And be able to set up future storylines at the same time.
Yeah.
That's really difficult.
Well, the advantage that a Supergirl story would have is a certain amount of world building is already in place because right. Everybody knows Superman's story. Mm-hmm. And you even see that in the beginning of the pilot, you know, when Kara is narrating, because it's a Greg Berlanti production, of course, there's going to be an opening narration. That's going to get old really quick. But she says, you know my cousin's story. I mean, that's all we need to know.
Right.
She's Superman's cousin. Okay, bang, we're there. We already know how half of this is going to go. So there's a certain amount of shorthand in place that helps with that whole world-building thing. You don't have to spend all the time explaining her powers and where she came from and all of this other stuff because it's already there.
Mm-hmm.
With the big guy, her cousin, him, the one in blue, the guy with the cape. up and away. How many different times do they say Superman without saying Superman in this pilot? Right?
It's like they had the Superman thesaurus handy.
It's like Voldemort from Harry Potter. You can't say his name.
You know, and I have to think that's a corporate mandate. That's Warner Brothers coming in and saying, you cannot say Superman.
They did a really good job of, you know, just setting up the structure of the story, too. I mean, they used a lot of standard tropes, but the fact that they built these very vulnerable characters and created Kara being very unsure about being a hero and then showing her early times as she's kind of relearning her powers and stuff. I mean, yeah, I think it's a really good job.
Sonya, you're being distinctively quiet.
Well, I wasn't a big fan of Supergirl, and
the character in general, right?
Yeah, I've just never been a big fan of Supergirl in general, and when I watched the show, I kind of agree with what Chris said, that it made it they did a good job of trying to make me care about the character. And I still don't care about her just yet. she hasn't sold me yet, but she's on her way. The episode ended strongly to where I was like, okay, you sold me for one more episode, so we shall see. I definitely did not like Calista Flockhart in that role.
Yeah.
You know, one of the challenging things is trying to get a sister relationship, too. And I think they captured that really well in the thing. And they did a good play, you know, of structuring it to where you kind of get that mid-show reveal of where Kara needs to be lifted up. And she, you know, the sister is forced, the human sister is forced to confess to her that she really wanted her to fail, actually.
And I thought that relationship was very
Yeah.
Strong. I mean, it's believable that they're sisters. That I saw right away.
And it's interesting too that her Alex wanting Kara to fail doesn't come from the usual I'm jealous of you type of thing. Yes, there's an acknowledgement of that. You know, when we were kids, yeah, I was jealous. But now she's wanting to keep her sister hidden because to protect her, which I thought was a good twist on that trope. Yeah, as opposed to just, oh, I hate you because you're always, you know, mom always did like you best, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it shows a much more complex relationship.
But I'm glad they didn't do that play. That's so tired. The jealous sister.
Yeah,
but the thing is, she also came into her own at the end, especially when her boss, which I laughed when they used the name Hank Henshaw. But anyway,
we'll get into that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But you know, when he said that, yeah, she was there because, you know, they were basically sisters. But since she's proved herself, you know,
and that
really.
Your name gets you in, your skills keep you in.
That plus you can see that further down the road in future episodes, it's not going to be she's still trying to prove herself. Yep. I mean, that's been so overdone. She's proven herself. She's a team player.
Yeah, it was handled right away, and now she can just start.
Well, because basically what we have to do is we have to get to our villain of the week structure.
Uh-huh. Who are going to be prisoners?
They built that well.
Yeah, and I'm concerned because when we do, if you look at shows like Gotham, which every now and then did the villain of the week episode, it's not as strong. The fact that there's an overarching plot
storyline
that holds all of these villains of the week together, I think will help. But yeah, I'm concerned. Now they've done it okay over on Arrow and the Flash.
Flash is definitely an example, though, of that too. You know, they started out with a very villain of the week flavor in the first four or five episodes, but like you say, that what came to the forefront was a much more developed, you know, connective tissue. So we can hope that with the scenes that we see at the end of the film or the show, that tissue will start to get explained more, and we'll see the bigger picture.
And one would kind of hope that it's not going to be a full villain of the week type of show, but more of each individual adventure in the greater battle in the war,
right,
so to speak.
Well, and I think also with Henshaw being there, you've got, I'll say, the potential for a build up to a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Although that's going to have to be played quite a bit differently in this show than it played out in the comics,
right?
Because of stuff, and we can talk about that.
Okay, I missed it. So do y'all want to see where the show is different every week, where she's fighting off a different villain, or do you want to see this big story arc? I don't think who said what?
I think both of them can work if it's handled right. If you just go villain of the week, then it's going to get old really quick. If you go villain of the week every so often as part of the bigger plot and scheme and threat that's looming ahead, I think it'll be okay. A lot of it's just going to depend on the writing.
Yeah, I agree. I just hope they don't just go into this self-discovery thing, because I can't stand that.
Oh,
she's
going to
self-discover and...
I gotta go find myself.
Yes! I can't stand that stuff.
I think they handled it well, you know, in showing, like, how she takes on the mantle and then, you know, her first kind of villain of the week, she really gets kind of walloped the first time, and then she shows that she has some greater strength and tactics, and she's going to get better.
Yeah, the scene that sold it for me was when she's looking in the mirror, and she's finally got the suit on, and it has the crest on the front, and she says, it's not an S, it's my family crest, the House of L. And that kind of goes to what Sonya was saying. It's not, I don't think she's going to be on any self-discovery arc, because that's the moment where she's back, as it were.
Right.
She knows who she is.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's still got quite a bit of awkwardness around her, but... because she's just starting out, that's to be expected, and they actually played that pretty well.
Well, and they even mentioned at the beginning, you know, the fact that she came to Earth. By the time she gets to Earth, Superman is already an adult. He's already established as Superman. She doesn't have a mission now.
Exactly.
Right.
So now she's got the suit, and okay, she's got the team, because, you know, it's a Berlanti production. She's got to have a team. And so now she has a new purpose. So now she actually has a reason for using all of these powers and being who she is and actually coming into her own. So I think that was a nice acknowledgement as a wink. Yes, we have this. Now we're going to move on.
I'm glad they didn't call the newspaper company a print media company like on The Flash. The Tribune that she works for.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad they didn't call it a print media company like in The Flash where Iris works.
It's a competitor.
Well, there's nothing wrong with print media. I mean,
I'm glad they just didn't call it a print media company specifically.
Well, it helps to not date it. Mm-hmm. Because if you're working for a major metropolitan newspaper, then you're going to have 8-year-olds going, "Mommy, what's a newspaper?"
it's what we used to lay down to potty train the dog.
Turn to the old person next to you.
Yeah, exactly.
they know what newspapers are.
I really like the actress that they have for Supergirl. I've loved her ever since she was on Glee. And I think she's really likable.
Now,
from the get-go.
And her, I have to mention her red skirt. Her red skirt was slamming. I know I'm a girl.
Cosplayer, it was great.
Yeah, that red skirt was just, she was killing it. And it was that Superman red, so it was perfect.
Well, and I like that, because I think Colleen Atwood, I think, is the costume designer on this one. She's done for all of the others. And looking at the Arrow costume, looking at the Black Canary costumes, looking at the Flash costume, and looking at Supergirl, this one is the closest one out of all of them to the comic book source.
Right.
And I like the fact that it's got elements of Helen Slater's Supergirl costume, because the belt, it's got that curvy V belt and the skirt, and the boots are a little bit higher up off the knee. But yeah, it still evokes that era, even though it's a little bit darker. But it's not as dark as the photos made it look to be. In the show, it's a little bit brighter, and I think that's good. The tone of Supergirl, the show, is much more like The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Arrow in season 4 is going to go lighter, because The Flash was such a hit.
And it's also a contrast to what the so-called DC Cinematic Universe, mm-hmm. what they're doing, which, you know, once it works for Marvel, and they say, and now it's working for DC's television, but they're going to go a completely different route on the silver screen.
Of course.
Huh.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense.
Well, okay, but again, bear in mind, we have two things. We have one film in the DC Cinematic Universe. We have a film that is being shot. We don't know what it's going to look like, despite the photos we've seen so far. It's really, really hard to compare the DC television to the DC Cinematic Universe right now, because there's one and a bunch of different DC TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
Does it look like it's going to be all somber and grimcore? Yeah, of course it does. But also, you know, they have clearly, whether it was part of the grand plan or they just stumbled into it, we're pretty sure they stumbled into it, they're setting up a multiverse. And, you know, because the Superman who shows up on Supergirl is probably not going to be played by the Superman in the Cinematic Universe, because we already know that we've got two different Flashes and...
Yep.
And probably two different Green Arrows when Green Arrow shows up in the Cinematic Universe and all that kind of stuff. So
they're basically going to build up to Crisis on Infinite Earths, is what.
They could go that way, but I don't know that. The comic book industry, fans in the comic books, are much more likely to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
to a storyline like Crisis on Infinite Earths more than your casual TV watcher.
True.
And I say that because you've got, with Crisis, you had not only the main core 12-issue series that ran for a year back in 1985-86,
mm-hmm.
but then you also had the ancillary spinoff solo stories that, for more on this story, go here, and mm-hmm. for more on this story, go here. And you had all of these side stories that went off in the solo titles of the various different DC comics.
Which they echoed several other times, like in Zero Hour and stuff like that.
Exactly. And the hardcore comic book readers are going to be able to follow all of that mm-hmm. because they keep track of all that. They pay attention to that. They read all of this stuff. They know it's all connected. I don't know that the TV audience is going to last that long. I don't think they mm-hmm. have that kind of patience.
True.
I think that if you're ending up with a crossover audience right now, you've got people who are watching Flash are watching Arrow and vice versa.
Yeah.
And when they bring in the new show, they're going to be watching that as well. And since they're already talking about the fact that there's a potential for, I mean, they were talking about a potential of a crossover with Constantine. And if Supergirl is going to have much more likelihood of getting to an audience and building an audience than Constantine did, may it rest in peace. And so I think that you could actually build yourself to doing a crossover and still keep the fans happy, because the people who are watching Flash and Arrow are exactly the same people who are going to be watching Supergirl.
I will agree with you on that up until a point. I see a demographic strategy here. Arrow is going to have more of a male audience, I think. The Flash has the mix appeal, and I think Supergirl is being geared toward a more female audience, even though I don't think it's going to play that way. I think you're going to get the same mix for Supergirl as you do with The Flash.
See, but I think there is a very... I would be hard-pressed to believe that there is not a very strong female audience for Arrow.
Well, I'd like to see what the general
statistics
are.
I'd love to see the breakdowns because...
Yeah, I'd like to see the numbers.
Well, because I mean, that how many times does Ollie take his shirt off?
Well, it is on the CW,
especially and, on yes, the I first know, yes, season.
And yeah. who is the target demographic for the CW?
You know, that's okay. Having worked for a CW affiliate, I can actually speak to this. Here in Kansas City, it was interesting because in the sales meetings that we had just about every week, the remarks would always be noted for the fact that nationwide, the CW's target market was the 18 to 24 crowd. But mm-hmm. in actual performance, they skewed older. And especially here in the Kansas City market, they skewed much older. And a lot of us,
much older.
Well, like 35 to 44, you know, that next the two tiers up. It was
young at heart people.
Well, it was almost like we were sitting there getting the moms and their kids, you know, moms
younger
and their daughters.
Yeah, right. Much older, and then he went for our age bracket.
Well, and that's not what the CW was geared for. Mm-hmm. they were looking for the 20-somethings, and they're getting
bracket.
Yeah, they're getting the 20-somethings and the 40-somethings, especially here in Kansas City. So we were sitting there, who do we advertise to? And I think that some of that is playing out in the network programming, because you get more of a certain particular audience than you bargain for. And CW is being very smart about this. They're saying, okay, well, we're getting this crowd. Let's do more shows that crowd likes.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to what Cartoon Network and WB Animation does is saying, well, the girls are watching. They're not buying the toys. Kill the show.
Yeah.
You know, we can't have that.
On a similar note there, something that I'd been thinking about, Oh, great. I lost my train of thought here. But, see. I completely lost my train of thought.
Okay, well, I tell you what we're going to do.
Oh,
you think,
I remember what it was.
Okay, well, okay. Well, we will come back to your train of thought after this break. We're gonna refill coffee mugs and let everybody kind of regroup. And when we come back, we'll get to Dan's thought, and then I also have a theory why. We'll talk about, you know, Chris is concerned about it being on CBS. I have a couple of theories that we'll explore after this break when the Rogues Gallery continues on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Stand by.
This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Hi, folks. My name is Timothy Harvey, and I am one of the co-hosts of H2O, the weekly show about everything genre that I host with Mr. Jason Hunt. And we talk about pretty much anything you need to hear about or want to hear about or didn't know you needed to hear about in the world of sci-fi, fantasy, horror, science fiction, all these great things that we cover every week. And it is just an opportunity for you to tune in and listen to some really, really fun stuff. H2O, scififorme.com. We'd love to have you listen.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Our Marvel discussion on Level 117, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi for Me TV. That's our YouTube channel where we have interviews, convention panel video, and Week in Review, where we deliver a digest of the news of the week. All part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out. Sci-Fi for Me Radio and Sci-Fi for Me TV. All part of scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
We wear our underwear on the inside of our clothes, just like Superman does now. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Back on the Rogues Gallery, talking about the Supergirl pilots. Jason Hutt here, along with Jeff Hackworth in Fort Worth.
Hello.
See how that works out? The two, you know, mm-hmm. Jeff Hackworth in Fort Worth. Sonia Rodriguez in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Hello.
Chris Jensen in Kansas City.
Hello.
As well as Tim Harvey in Kansas City.
Hello, hello.
And Dan Hanley here in the studio where we have chocolate cupcakes.
Ooh. Good ones.
Yeah. And the irony is these are probably chocolate cupcakes left over from my ex-wife's wedding. So I'm like, it's kind of a mixed bag there, you know? Okay.
See,
now
hey, if we were chocolate talking cupcakes. About the Flash, we could have the Mirror Master send us all cupcakes.
See, you know, we could do that.
And anybody got his phone number?
Yeah. Okay, so...
we were talking about the demographics.
Yes, Dan has a point.
And something that I was thinking about, it talked about, you know, killing shows because they didn't have the right demographic and this type of thing, and reminded me, you know, all the talk, you know, people saying, well, we need stronger female characters in comic books, more, you know, female superheroes. And I'm sitting here thinking, wait a minute. They figured that about 46% of their, what is just under 50% of their readership, are female. But it's working.
According to Ashley Eckstein, who played Ahsoka Tano in the animated Star Wars, we did an interview with her just as she started her Universe clothing line. And according to her research, just in genre overall, science fiction, fantasy, fandom, 52%, I think she said, are women.
And so the formula seems to be working, but yet they talk about, we need to start reaching women. You're already doing that.
Well, except they're not reaching them in merchandise.
No, that's true. It's like,
because girls don't buy the action figures.
Well, then do what real marketers do and put out the merchandise that they will buy.
Okay, so first you're saying that you want to reach women. And what did you say, 52% that are watching are who?
52% of science fiction fandom in general is female, according to Ashley Eckstein's research. That's not comic book readers. That's not
girls or women.
Both. All of the above. All ages. 52% of fandom in general is female.
And wasn't it like 40?
Whether, you know, 14-year-olds, 40-year-olds, all of it.
And wasn't it like 46% or something like that on the comic book?
I think so. Yeah. So the you know, demographically, the audience is already there, and they're primed for the strong. Tim and I have talked about this before when we talked about Black Widow. I think that it doesn't necessarily need to be a female lead hero so much as it needs to be a good story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Supergirl's pilot has a good story, and as long as they maintain that, and they've got the bonus of having a female lead character, gravy. Then they're going to do fine. I see probably in the first three episodes they'll announce season two.
Yeah. Well, and something I was just now thinking about, just over the last few minutes, we talked about earlier. It's great that they got certain things out of the way. She's already come into her own. Mm-hmm. Her sister has already, you know, proved herself. This type of thing. Whereas a lot of other series or that type of thing will stretch it out a ways.
Right.
The only thing is, okay, what are they going to do in the next episode? Have they already burned that out? Or do they have something else in line?
Well, and that's where it goes back to, are we going to do Villain of the Week?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to get some of that, but I think we're going to get some of the bigger conspiracy arc.
But in terms of character development, how much character development can he do in each episode when you've got, you know, the biggest obstacles already out of the way?
Well, they have that whole situation with the good guys being her first bad guys. They didn't.
Right, exactly.
They still don't trust her. And I think, really, to your point that they've gotten all of it out of the way, I don't know that they necessarily have, because she's still got to figure out the extent of her powers.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but I think you're going to get you're probably going to get a balance in each episode between action movie and, I don't want to say Ally McBeal, but that whole
interpersonal,
the girly stuff, you know,
the drama, the
Devil Wears Prada stuff, because you've got the relationship with Cat Grant that's going to have to develop. You've got the inner office politics.
And then, of course,
you got Winslow Schott, who wants to be her boyfriend.
And then she seems to have a thing for Jimmy Olsen. You know?
Yeah, James.
James Olsen, that's right.
James Olsen. Yeah, we haven't even talked about him yet.
Only you know who and his mom can call him Jimmy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to say you know who is.
You know
the
who.
Big man.
Yeah.
The guy who actually posed for the photo that he got a Pulitzer for.
Yeah. Well, and I'm perfectly fine with older Jimmy, you know, coming into his own, and you know, because really in the timeline, in the chronology that's established in the show, Superman has already been active for a while when Kara lands on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he's probably, what, 24, 25 years old when she gets there. And so then you add the amount of time it takes for her to grow up from 14 to however old she is. She's probably 24, 25 working for Cat Grant. So there's another 10. So Superman's now in his 30s.
Right.
He's established. I don't expect that Jimmy Olsen would be a cub photographer.
Mm-hmm.
Golly gee whiz. For 10, 15 years.
Right.
So I'm perfectly fine buying into him being an art director by this time. He's got the experience. He's got the Pulitzer. He's done his time in the trenches. I'm fine with that. I do have a slight problem with James Olsen, the NBA basketball star. It's not so much that he's black.
There's been variations.
That ship has sailed, and it's never coming back.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the reasons why Jimmy Olsen has always worked as a character is because of his inherent awkwardness. and that it's not really
grow out of that.
Yeah, he can grow out of it, but still,
he was still kind of nerdy, especially when he had in the comic books when he had his own television show, and he tried to out Superman, you know, who he really was. You know, he was a nerd.
Still
nerdy. Yeah,
it just doesn't. It's just this James Olsen just doesn't feel like he came from that Jimmy Olsen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the problem is not that he doesn't feel like he came from that. It's that we never saw the transition.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfectly fine for the character to grow and develop the confidence and become the person that Jimmy Olsen, if he was not completely trapped in the inevitable unagingness of comic books. Nobody ever gets older in comic books.
Except John Constantine.
So,
except Wolverine.
Well, Wolverine and John Constantine.
Yeah.
I can completely see it. I can completely see Jimmy Olsen over time losing the awkwardness, becoming, you know, coming into his own. The problem is that we didn't see the character change. We went from the Jimmy Olsen that we know, and admittedly, we're the comic book people. For a chunk of the audience who's, a good chunk of the audience who's going to be watching the show, they know the name Jimmy Olsen, but they're not necessarily going to be going, they're not going to get the jarring effect that we are.
But I think it also...
That's actually something really good, though, because that, for those of us that are comic book fans, I think that gives us hope for the writing. I mean, it shows that the writers approached this material and put some real thought into it, you know, because they said, you know, who is Jimmy Olsen going to be in this series? You know, we don't want him to be this time-capsuled, you know, locked character arc. So I really think that's a good sign.
My big concern...
Well, my big concern is
that they're going to...
Go ahead.
Yeah, that looks... To me, it's almost like they're trying to build romantic subplots.
Oh, yeah. It's like the triangle is going to be there. The triangle's there already. It's between Kara, Winslow,
Have you watched the Greg Berlanti show?
Well, it's one of those things that, you know, there are so many heroes that you don't need it with, and it's like, why is there, anytime there's a female character, that there has to be a romantic subplot?
No, the Flash has got one. Well, Arrow's got two.
I'm not saying that it's a limitation. A lot of these heroes do.
All of them do. I mean, Superman, Lois Lane, Green Arrow, Black Canary, Flash, and Iris, Supergirl and Jimmy Olsen in some storylines, Robin and Batgirl, Robin and Starfire, Kid Flash and Raven, who else? Help me out. Red Hood and Starfire. So I mean, those are not. That's not anything unusual,
right?
I do find it interesting, though, that this her best friend at the magazine is Winslow Schott. And for those of you who are still, you know, filling out your scorecard, Winslow Schott is the toy maker. He's a villain in the DC universe.
And see, that was actually something that kind of made me a little bit. Okay, and this is one of my issues with Gotham, of my many issues with Gotham.
You can hear those in previous episodes of the
Road. Exactly, and I think I went on for a while, but there's a tendency that we're slotting characters in places that they don't necessarily organically go. Now. Okay, every one of these TV shows is a different interpretation of the character.
Right.
Okay, and that's fine. It's a different medium. It's doing stuff for audiences who don't come with the back history of all of these characters, and that's perfectly fine. But you get to someone like Winslow Schott, and you sit there and go, wait, if in pretty much every incarnation of this character, there isn't a whole lot of sympathy to be had.
He's not a good guy.
You know, bad things happen to him make him do what he does, but bad things happen to everybody, and we don't become, you know.
Well, there's definitely a precedent, like in Berlanti's shows, to, you know, create characters as a potential Easter egg that may evolve into something else. But also, more than that, he cherry picks names. I mean, if you look over Arrow and Flash, they've mixed up characters and origins and names all over the place.
Oh, sure. But the thing is that you have someone like, I mean, for a good chunk of, for the comic book fans who will recognize the name and will know where this character could potentially go, the fact that you're having any kind of relationship that isn't tinged with a certain amount of horror, from post-crisis on, Shot was pretty horrible. I mean, just pretty monstrous. And it'd be very, I don't know, it just feels like a very odd place to put him.
But they could develop the kind of romantic sort of, what am I looking for? Where basically, he gets kind of cast away. He can't compete with Olsen.
Oh, God, if he becomes a jilted, if this turns into a jilted lover thing, I will throw the TV off the balcony.
Hey, it is CBS.
I'm so
I know, but still.
I'm so out.
But that's lazy writing. And that's one thing that we can say is that however you feel about what DC's doing in the comics or what they're doing in the cinematic universe, and for television, although it hasn't been perfect by any stretch of imagination, the first season of Arrow was particularly rocky. But generally, they've done a really good job of not being lazy with their writing. Mm-hmm. And I would hate to see an iconic figure like Supergirl get tripped up by just, and now it's time for the jilted lover to turn into the villain. It's like,
maybe he's already the villain and we don't know it yet. Maybe he's secretly
he seems too happy-go-lucky, Sex in the City, best friend.
And that kind of thing has been done before. That's the thing. It's been done before.
Maybe he's been watching Gotham, and his favorite character is Edward Nygma. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, and I'm gonna say, and I've said this before, there is no such thing as an original idea anymore.
True.
Even if you get somebody who wins an award for wins a Pulitzer or something for literature. There is nothing in these stories that is brand new. Having said that, I can see where it's a little bit early to see what the trajectory is for Winslow, but I can see this. I have a particular amount of trust in Berlanti and his group if they do the Jilted Lover story. There will be a twist. It won't be like what they've been doing with Barbara Keene over on Gotham, which was completely crazy stupid.
I'm sorry, there's no character named Barbara Keene over on Gotham. I don't know.
I'm willing to give Berlanti and his group the benefit of the doubt. If you're talking DC Comics filmed media.
Well, also, Berlanti has nothing to do with Gotham, so.
No, that's true. That's right. But if you're talking DC film media, there are two people that I would trust almost 100% with anything you give them. Berlanti is one of them. Greg Berlanti is one. The other one is Bruce Timm.
Yep.
And I've been saying for the longest time, and a lot of people have said, give Bruce Timm and Paul Dini the movies. And I think Greg Berlanti and his team are a worthy successor to that mantle. Because Bruce Timm and Paul Dini, they did all the animated stuff in the 90s. They get it. They proved that they understand all of this.
But Jason, have you seen the clips to the new animated film?
I have, yes. Gods and Monsters.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking at it kind of sideways a little bit, but I'm also recognizing that this is not the Justice League. This is an alternate Earth. And it's, Bruce Timm being able to play with characters that aren't necessarily the characters that we're used to.
Right.
So he can get a little bit of leeway on this for now. I'll reserve judgment for when I actually see it. What I've seen so far has not made me cringe yet. Maybe. Much.
So I actually really enjoyed them for the very simple fact that I like to see what he does, because he actually has got an interesting imagination.
Yeah. Well,
he gets a chance to play with that, and we get a chance to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And so when he does something like this, at least I know that he's thought about what he's doing with these characters.
Well, so it's an Elseworlds thing.
If he's going to push our buttons with some of these things, you know that he's thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a thought process behind it. He's going, well, of course I want you to sit there and go, hang on, Batman's got fangs.
And I think that could be said of Greg Berlanti and Andrew Kreisberg and Mark Guggenheim, because they've clearly mapped out where they want to go with certain things. And we've talked about the fact that Ray Palmer, you know, Brandon Routh's character over on Arrow, should have been Ted Kord, and everybody that I've talked to is convinced that the character originally was Ted Kord, and something corporate made it necessary to change. They're coming for you, Tim.
They always are. But they never find me.
Because he has fangs.
He's in his secret lair.
That's right. I think something corporate came down and said, no, you can't use Ted Kord. And Ted Kord suddenly became Ray Palmer. I don't think Ray Palmer was going to be Ray Palmer. I think he was going to be Ted Kord. And I think Legends of Tomorrow was going to introduce Blue Beetle instead of Rip Hunter. Mm-hmm. And we were going to get Blue and Gold in Legends of Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, we talk about the multiverse, and this goes back to Chris's point about the fact that Supergirl is on CBS. I think that somebody made a deal, because if you understand that CBS and Time Warner own the CW, it's a 50-50 thing. Because the C in CW is CBS and the W is Warner. Mm-hmm. So CBS and Warner Brothers own CW. They've already got two hit shows on CW. NBC's got Constantine. Fox has got Gotham. They're getting Lucifer. Everybody's got a superhero show. NBC's going to have Heroes Reborn. Everybody's got one except CBS. CBS says, hang on. We want a piece of this pie. So in order to get their own thing, somebody is doing something in order for CBS to get Supergirl. Some kind of a deal was in place. But given the fact that CBS owns CW, Time Warner owns TNT, where Titans is under development, which is also a DC Comics, you know, Teen Titans adaptation. Mm-hmm. We're going to get a crossover on all of them. Legends of Tomorrow is going to be the gateway, because we go into Flash season 2, and we're going to be on Earth 2 and Earth 3 and however many other Earth fill in the blanks we're going to get. Legends of Tomorrow is going to give us time travel and multiverse. So those are going to be the places where we can introduce the crossovers between the networks. So not only is Arrow and the Flash going to cross over into Supergirl and vice versa, but we're probably going to get Melissa Benoist playing Supergirl in the animated Vixen, and who knows how many of them are going to cross over into Titans when it goes into production. I think that there is you talk about, you know, Bruce Timm thinking things through. I think Berlanti and that group, they have a long-term plan for introducing various different elements. And as they go, the more things that they do, the more things they accomplish, the more Warner Brothers and DC Comics is comfortable giving them more characters to play with. Right now, we know from Guggenheim that Gotham and Metropolis are off the table.
Mm-hmm. I think the next character that they're going to do is Green Lantern.
I do too. They've been laying the groundwork for Green Lantern.
Laid the groundwork in Flash. They've laid the groundwork in Arrow. They just laid the groundwork in Supergirl with Hank Henshaw who is one of the most famous Yellow Lanterns of all time.
That's right. I forgot about that. Because I grew up with Hank Henshaw being Cyborg Superman.
Right. He was a low level villain.
That's right.
And then his team died, and he was sucked away. We didn't see him until he came back as Cyborg Superman.
So now that makes sense, because we were talking about Hank Henshaw being in this thing, and I'm thinking, how are they going to make that work? First of all, it's Hank Henshaw, who's a Superman villain in a non-Superman show. Granted, it's Supergirl. She's related.
Super Family.
But also the fact that he doesn't look anything like Superman, and one of the things about all of the different Supermen that came back after Superman died was that they all looked like him.
Okay, but hold on. In his original appearance, when he and his team showed up, remember they were he and his team originally appeared as a pastiche of the Fantastic Four.
Right. Right.
So, but he didn't look anything like Superman then either. In fact, as he fell apart, essentially, he physically, literally did fall apart, he looked even less and less. It wasn't until he came back, and that was, you know, that he basically made himself look like Superman. So you actually have the potential of this character becoming, because you're not going to get the Death of Superman arc on this show.
Right.
So just take that completely off the table. But you still have the potential of having him turn into a villain, who he could be a cyborg villain, or he could become a Yellow Lantern, or all of these things. Where they're going to take him, and because they've already established him as an antagonist.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Not a villain, but an antagonist.
Yeah.
Maybe that medal he took from the, from Supergirl that came from the villain, is making a suit out of it.
Well,
protective suit.
And as we've discussed on this show before, not only do we have established the groundwork for Green Lantern with Coast City and Ferris Air and the fact that one of their pilots went missing, nudge nudge, wink wink, but you also have introduced we've also introduced the color spectrum. You know, the emotional color spectrum when we got the Rainbow Raider. And I think, really, the Rainbow Raider episode was only there to introduce the color spectrum. Because Geoff Johns is there, and Geoff Johns has already said this is a multiverse, and he loves Green Lantern. And so
reinvigorated the title.
But Hank Henshaw being a Yellow Lantern, that actually plays better if you consider the fact that they're going to introduce a Green Lantern over on Arrow and the Flash.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
could be.
Let's complicate the mix a little bit, because we've got Ezra Miller playing the Flash in the movies. We don't know which one yet. He could be another Barry Allen, or he could be Wally West. Now we get word this week that the Green Lantern movie, which is slated for 2020. There is a possibility that when the DC filmed media universe thing, Snyderverse, hits Hall H at San Diego Comic-Con in a few weeks, they're going to introduce not one, but two Green Lanterns for that movie.
Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart.
Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart, played by Chris Pine and Tyrese Gibson. Tyrese Gibson, of course, has this huge following. The fans were basically the ones who said, Tyrese Gibson for Jon Stewart. And all of this fan art and everything just exploded on the internet. And he got behind it. And apparently that got him a meeting with Warner Brothers, because, you know, he's in one of the top grossing movies with Furious 7. And, you know, he's got a franchise behind him. And so now they're talking about him possibly playing Jon Stewart. And then Chris Pine, who was rumored to be in negotiations to play Steve Trevor.
Steve Trevor.
Mm-hmm. Now everybody's flipping around, Latino Review is saying, oh no, that was a smokescreen. He's really going to be Hal Jordan. So if we're getting Hal Jordan again in the movies, does that take Hal Jordan out of the mix for TV? Because we know it did for Deadshot. They had to kill Deadshot in the Arrow universe in, because you got Suicide Squad movie coming out. Mm-hmm. So how complicated is that going to be?
Especially when...
Well, I think you're going to do, I think you're going to do a couple of things, because when you've got Deadshot, when you've got Deadshot being played by Will Smith, it changes the dynamic for, you know, what's going on. They're going to be using Will Smith as a marketing tool,
right?
For this, I mean, that's just that, you know, he's a star, and so I could see that's a major reason they said leave Deadshot alone in the TV show. We don't want to cause confusion. We want to market. We want to use Will Smith, slap him all over the posters, and so we don't want to have people sitting there going, wait a minute, isn't there another Deadshot? I can see that a lot more than I can see them being concerned about Green Lantern in that way, because they had a failed Green Lantern film. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a level of throw it up against the wall and try and make it stick, because it didn't.
Yeah.
And so I think you could have, and not to mention the fact, you can have multiple Green Lanterns because there are multiple Green Lanterns. You could end up with a movie universe Kyle Rayner.
And 7,200 Green Lanterns.
If they want somebody to play Guy Gardner, I'll put my name in.
Yeah, you could have Guy Gardner, and Hal Jordan show up on TV, and have an odd couple bickering episode essentially, and then do John Stewart in the cinematic universe. You know, you have Chris Pine show up as Hal Jordan for half the film, and then, you know, whatever, and then but your star is John Stewart, who already pulls in the audience from the animated Justice League series.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I mean there's things you can do with that, and I think they got more flexibility with Green Lantern than they do with, say, Green Arrow or The Flash or things like that.
Or when we get to Earth 2, we can meet Alan Scott with Jay Garrick.
Well, what's going to happen is that we're going to go to Earth 2 in the first episode of Flash Season 2.
Right.
And
right.
Yes, give me
Alan Scott.
Give me Alan Scott. That's right.
I was talking.
Who would you cast as Alan Scott?
Young Alan Scott or old Alan Scott?
Well, you're going to be older because Jay Garrick, because there's obviously a history there with Jay Garrick
bring me Robert Redford.
What?
Robert Redford.
He said Robert Redford.
Yeah. I don't know that he's. He may be too old. I think. Who would you cast?
Hard to say.
I'm looking here and I'm realizing we've left Sonya behind in the dust on this conversation. We're supposed to be talking about Supergirl, which just went
off on a different tangent.
Okay.
We digress.
I'm enjoying listening to all this.
She has a very.
This is called And We Digress.
Very,
and
so, all around, well, so. We at least we're still.
I was laughing about the Will Smith and how they need a star. I mean, when is the last time that guy had a hit?
Independence Day, Men in Black. It's been a while.
Well, the thing is,
he's had box office success,
right, not as big as he used to.
Definitely not Hancock.
Right?
Well, no. Actually, Hancock made money. I Am Legend made a ton of money.
A recent movie.
iRobot made money.
You're going way back, Tim. Come on, come forward.
we're still playing in the last 10-15 years, which is
Pursuit
what still counts
of
as a star.
Is good.
Well, I tell you what, if you wanted to bring having Jay Garrick or Alan Scott would be a great way of bringing back some of the stars of the 80s.
I was talking with James about this earlier, my son, and he said, you know what would be cool? Because, you know, he's already up to speed. He knows we're going to get the multiverse. He knows we're going to get Earth 2 and Earth 3 and all of that. He said, somewhere out there, Grant Gustin's Barry Allen is going to jump onto an Earth where John Wesley ships Barry Allen is still the Flash. Because John Wesley Shipp is going to be playing an older Barry Allen. And Grant Gustin is the younger Barry Allen.
Oh, wow.
And so that's going to be another Earth, and that's how you bring in all, you know, Alex Desert and Amanda Pays and all of the cast from the TV show in a different universe where Barry Allen got zapped later in life, and so now you have the older Barry Allen and the younger Barry Allen, and that's how that's gonna have to play into it. Because you remember when Barry sat there and got to talk to his mom right before she died, she said, "You look just like my dad." Right? So there's obviously they're gonna play with that a little bit. That line, I don't think that line would be there just to be there, but yeah, I think that would be fun to see. You know, John Wesley Shipp as the Flash next to Grant Gustin as the Flash.
But even like Alan Scott, you could still pull out from the 80s somebody who was big, and then bring him in as a kind of a second shot.
Wow,
you know,
who would you get though?
It's hard to say.
Well, if we got Aaron Eckhart as Alan Scott.
Aaron Eckhart?
You know, Aaron Eckhart could work. I think he's working cheap these days. So,
Sean Bean. No, wait. He'll die.
Well, but see, that's, you know, then you could have his daughter Jade show up and take up the mantle. Yeah. And she be, because she's young, she could cross over with Flash, because she's young and pretty, and she's been on the CW, so...
Oh, there we go.
And then she can date John or Kyle.
See, if they just...
It all links up.
If they would just listen to us.
Bring in Bruce Campbell, because Bruce Campbell. For what? I don't know.
Bruce Campbell is Ted Grant.
Oh, there we go.
An older Ted Grant.
See, there you go.
Or Starman. He could be Starman.
He could be Ted Knight.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
There we go.
And there's your next CW show, because you take it in and you have the younger, his son, and then you get a TV adaptation of the critically acclaimed Robinson series, Starman, where you have a superhero who didn't put on a costume. They should definitely talk to us. We got their next show lined up here.
If only Bruce Campbell wasn't tied up with the Evil Dead series.
Well, that's only 10 episodes.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Unless it gets renewed.
Yeah. Well, even then, I mean, that gives him plenty of time to do some guest shots.
Yeah, that's true.
On stuff. You know, and I've still got that Zatanna pitch in a drawer somewhere in my desk. So, you know, we could line up so many different shows.
Somebody get DC on the phone. Right. We've got this laid out.
But the one
here's the problem with Zatanna. You need to do it on a different channel, because we've already established that they don't know how to do magic based shows on network TV at this time.
Right.
Well, I'd put Zatanna on Netflix.
I would too.
And I'd
I can see that. And
I'd set it in Gotham, and I'd give Batman a cameo, because they have a connection,
right?
Because Batman.
Right.
But the thrust of that episode, the thrust of that is going to be a mystery. It'd be a mystery, because she's looking for her dad. The setup for the whole thing is her dad disappears. And that could be
supernatural. They could go cross. She could go cross country.
Oh wait, no. This is and then she runs into an old friend of hers who's a bit of a liar and an alcoholic and a chain-smoking
con
man. And he's hanging out with Swamp Thing.
Well, there's still the possibility, and I don't know how likely this is, but there's still the possibility Matt Ryan could show up on Arrow as John Constantine.
I think they should, if nothing else, for him to have they've already given us the Lazarus Pit.
Yeah.
And so we've cracked the door open for magic.
Yeah.
And if you bring him in and just blow it up, and then put those characters And then you can do it with Supergirl too, as I bring it back around.
See, I was just about to do that.
Oh, okay.
Because Superman, and consequently as well, Supergirl, they're vulnerable to magic.
Yeah.
Whereas the rest of, you know, they can take a bazooka to the head and go, really? but you get somebody coming along casting a spell and all of a sudden all bets are off. So that could, you know, if they were smart and they have, and the TV guys, you know, so far they seem to be, if they've got a long-term plan, if they're building a multiverse and they do want to bring somebody like Matt Ryan back in, they could do it and have it fit.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a shoehorn. It'd be we're building this bigger picture.
And if Constantine does come back, every brown coat is going to be asking, how'd you do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the only challenge that I see to Matt Ryan coming back as Constantine is the fact that it was a completely different production company. I mean, yes, right. It was still Warner Brothers Television doing the whole thing, but it was David Goyer and not Greg Berlanti. But I think Berlanti would be able to handle it better.
Mm-hmm. Well, considering that they were already talking about the potential of a crossover,
yeah.
I think that probably whatever legal hoops they would have had there, any licensing hoops, and with, you know, whatever with the production companies themselves, probably was already worked out. Even if it was a handshake deal, there was probably something in place.
Yeah,
awesome.
Because these guys don't go out in public and talk about, yeah, we'd love to have him show up on our show without having run that past the other guy anyway.
Speaking of which, I want to get back just to a little bit here about corporate intrigue for a minute, network intrigue, and we'll end with this. And Sonia, I want to make sure that you guys jump in, and Chris and Jeff, because you're just sitting there smiling. This is just a fun. Oh, hold on, what's going on? Hey, what? Come on.
Uh-oh.
Okay, no, we're still good.
What'd you break?
I didn't break anything. I had a little.
Little
window popped up on the computer that wasn't supposed to pop up. Okay, so here's my theory. I have a theory.
You've always got theories.
The fan.
Wait, what?
The fan reaction to the 6-minute rom-com Devil Wears Prada promo. Mm-hmm. Everybody blew a gasket that this was going to be.
SNL Black Widow.
Exactly.
Spoof.
You know, and I don't think that the reaction to the Supergirl promo would have been as strong if that Black Widow piece hadn't been out there for a week. But the timing on it was just so accidentally brilliant that I think somebody at CBS leaked the pilot on purpose.
Gasp.
Normally when you get a leak of something like that, you're getting either a work print or, like in the case of the Doctor Who things, you got, you know, black and white copies that are just sent off for translation into another language. The special effects aren't done, the music track's not done, the title track, you know, nothing was finished. It wasn't complete. There were 5 episodes, none of them were finished. The Wonder Woman pilot, it was done, but I don't think the sound mix was finished. But you get watermarks.
The sound mix wasn't done, and there was still some effect work that was incomplete.
Yeah, and there's watermarks everywhere. Property of WBTV, yada, yada, yada. This pilot was too clean.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it was super polished.
It was.
I think you could very much argue that it was in their best interests
to
leak it.
I think so. Because the fan trailers were much better than the corporate trailer. The network trailer just really blew it. And the new
trailer's pretty good.
The new trailer is much better. And it is much more in keeping with what the show actually does look like and actually how it plays out. But I think
unknowns to the audience and those of us who have seen it, we can say that maybe it shows a little bit too much of the crunch.
Maybe, but I think the way the pilot ends, I think there's much more room to explore if they do it right. I think we're not shooting the whole you know, all the kettle of fish in the first episode. But I do think it was leaked on purpose. I think it was pushed out there, finished, complete, polished. All the special effects are in place. All the titles, everything is done, and there's no watermark. There's no "don't steal this," you know, none of that you normally would find on something that gets leaked.
Well, I wouldn't be at all surprised. Most people wouldn't, but I mean, you talk about there's all different reasons for leaking something and going to the.
I think damage control.
If we go to the Marvel Fox side, you know, with the Deadpool footage, when that was leaked, it's like, you know, there you could say there's a lot of different ways this was leaked, but I mean, it was almost quite obviously the production company trying to force Fox's hand.
Oh, and they admitted letting it out.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, even early on, it seemed pretty obvious because they had a good product that they really wanted to do. Fox wasn't greenlighting. And so they wanted to get the fans behind it. So there's always a reason. There's always reasons for leaks, one or the other. But this one, the only viable reason anybody can come up with is damage control.
I think it was a lot of that because you have to consider too that CBS has not had a superhero show since The Flash in 1990. That was 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That number keeps coming up, doesn't it, Sonia? We had The Flash on CBS. We had Beauty and the Beast on CBS, which is fantasy, not really superhero. But outside of that, CBS has not delved into genre very much, especially in the last decade.
Well,
I don't think they know how to market it. And when they put this thing out there, and the reaction was what it was, they went, "We stepped in it. Let's put something out." And they put the Sonia?
Wasn't there tagline for CBS is "We do drama" or "We know drama"? Not what they're.
That's TNT, I think.
That AB Someone. Is that CBS?
That's
no, it's TNT.
Is that TNT?
What is CBS? Well, CBS is something similar.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I think CBS has been late to the game because they haven't needed to. They've got the CSI and NCIS.
Yeah, they're
franchises.
All the crime.
And they've been dominating the ratings for how many years? And now they're running behind, but it's like ratings wise they haven't had to.
Yeah, and I think that's part of their, you know, a lot of the shows that they've got are starting to get a little long in the tooth.
Mm-hmm.
And their audience maybe same.
Yeah, even though they're still pulling the ratings.
Yeah, they need fresh blood.
Because they're on like their 25th season of Survivor, and like their 12th
Big Brother's
season
going
of
on.
Big
but,
Brother.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I think the only thing that I think would lead them to believe that they should jump in is probably the merchandising end, the merchandising marketing end. If they get a piece of that action,
well,
because they can't really get a whole lot of merchandising out of NCIS or CSI or that type of thing.
Yeah, that could be part of it too. We'll see. But okay, so predictions for the season. What's going to happen, Sonia? What do you think is going to happen?
I couldn't hear the question. The mic went crazy.
Prediction for the season.
Prediction for the season.
Yeah, where do you think the show is going to go from the pilot?
No idea.
Without giving away spoilers.
The whole point is to not know what's going to happen. If you know what's going to happen, why watch the show? You want to be surprised. I hope they surprise
always,
me.
Always, always.
I hope I can't predict.
Always the practical one.
I hope I can't predict it. I hope that they don't do the same sorry love triangle. I hope they don't do the dumb discovery. I'm going to discover myself. I hope that the villain doesn't get scorned and he becomes bad because he was scorned. That's all the stuff I don't want to happen. That's my prediction, that stuff won't happen.
Jeff, where do you think?
I have hopes for it, that it won't happen.
So, turns out Hank Henshaw and General Zod are working together. And Zod found a yellow power ring and wanted to give it to him. And, you know, he does. And then they wreak havoc on, what's the city? National City?
National City, yeah.
National City.
Which I think, and I'd have to look at this, but I think National City is an old Justice Society reference.
And they're gonna, and then like Barry's gonna help fight, but he's gonna go so far into the future that Supergirl has to contact the Legion of Superheroes. and then they're all gonna take down Zod and
everybody into it. Yeah. And then of course Doomsday shows up. All right,
Chris, yeah, I'm gonna jump on Jeff's bandwagon. That was a good one.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, Chris.
I would say that I think it's gonna have something to do with the Phantom Zone. I think there that you know Kara's gonna end up finding a solution to. You know, the villain of the week thing, and she's going to have to tow that prison back into the Phantom Zone, and then she'll get lost in the Phantom Zone. That's the season finale.
Hmm.
Oh, and Barry can save her.
Okay.
I'm gonna go with the Phantom Zone, but it's going to be that's where they're going to lose Henshaw, and that's going to be because over the course of the series, he will become more and more paranoid about the aliens among us. And while he will find Supergirl to be a useful tool, he will never trust her. And in fact, he will be plotting the entire time for a way to destroy her because he's going to be the Lex Luthor of the show.
Yeah.
He's going to be the big bad over time. And so it's going to build up to him being viewed as the true enemy of whatever's going on the rest of the season. The Phantoms, they'll have the Phantom Zone prison. He'll get sucked away so that when he comes back, we get the cyborg villain and when he comes back in season two, he will be like, I was wrong about you. Everything's fine. Everything's wonderful. And he will be the serpent within their midst. So, yeah, that's what's going to happen.
Do you think Ward will be in the Phantom Zone? Sinestro's home planet.
That would be kind of a stretch, wouldn't it?
See, I thought you said Ward.
No,
and I sat there and went, people know. Well, no. He has become a villain again, no, so I mean, we can put him over a crossover. It'd be the
different
DC,
universe.
The DC Marvel crossover we didn't know was coming.
Yeah. I meant Ward, Sinestro's home planet.
I know.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't think so because we're gonna the whole Quard has ended up. Becoming such a back and forth antimatter, you know, whatever thing for so it, nobody even I don't even think anybody even knows anymore.
I don't know if you want a crisis type of thing. That's about it.
Well,
it's there in the Lego game.
So okay, so Tim, you think Henshaw is going to come back as the cyborg, not as a Yellow Lantern?
I think if you don't introduce your Green Lantern quickly, because remember we're gonna get you know Supergirl coming up, you know, without new seasons of The Flash and Arrow to build that world for us already. So if you're gonna establish that stuff over in on a different network, you've got to build up a reason for that crossover to work. I don't think you can get there yet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not in the first season. If the second season, if you get a second first season crossover or a second season crossover, or build up enough of a mutual storyline that you can sit there and go, hang on, they're telling parallel stories. There's going to be a crossover. If you can get that, then you can do that. But I think until you get more of a Green Lantern established, you're not going to make him a Yellow Lantern because you got to have context.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to say that you get Green Lantern in season four of Arrow and season two of Flash. He's going to be introduced there somewhere. Mm-hmm. I would love to see Green Arrow, Green Lantern, Denny O'Neil, Neil Adams. Stuff.
Nice.
I want to see that run. That would take a little bit of building up because Green Arrow in this story universe is not the hippie,
the bunny hugging literal.
But here's the sad thing, and this is kind of a sad thing. think about it, we are not too removed, and unfortunately, from the societal problems that made that run so powerful, is that it looked at it in a way you weren't expecting a comic book to look at.
Right.
Or a superhero comic book to look at it, if nothing, let alone just a comic book. Unfortunately, you could do that series now.
Yeah, you could.
And it would, obviously it would be different because the world's still a different place. But those underlying themes, we still have them.
Well, and we already got Speedy with the drug problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was already there. So I think there is a potential for that. All right, Dan, your prediction for the season, Supergirl.
Well, based off the leaked scripts that I've read.
What?
I have no idea because I haven't seen any leaked scripts. Anyway.
I was going to say, wait a minute.
I had to pull that. But anyway, be honest with you, I have no idea where it's going to go. All I can say is I hope that they don't get caught in any of the old cliches and this type of thing. I want them to keep us on edge. I want to keep us surprised. A lot of shows can start off good, you know, and then they kind of burn themselves out quickly.
Right.
This one hit the ground running.
Yeah, it did.
I don't want it to burn itself out too quickly and start pulling cliches to try to keep itself afloat.
I'm going to agree with you. I think I'm going to lean more toward Hank Henshaw showing up as a Yellow Lantern before he becomes a cyborg, only because the groundwork has already been laid for that type of story rather than the cyborg story. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be the end of this season, however. I think we'll get a season that gives us the Green Lantern Corps, and we'll get a little bit closer to the Green Lantern movie, and then next season two, at some point there, Henshaw is going to get a ring. And who knows, maybe Winslow Schott makes the ring.
Yeah.
As part of his scorned lover storyline.
It turns out he brings a yellow ring, but it turns out just to be a ring pop.
It could be, yeah, that too.
All right.
Okay,
I see. So, season three or season four prediction is a death of Supergirl.
Or have her turn into a Red Lantern. She's a Red Lantern in the comics.
Well, yeah. See, now that's another potential there for the season finale. Season three, I'd say season three finale. She goes Red Lantern, because by then we've had plenty of time to establish the Green Lantern Corps and the emotional spectrum, and we've got Green Lantern by then, and we've got Yellow Lantern, Sinestro, all of that stuff can be, that's plenty of time for all of that to get put into place. Mm-hmm. And crossover with Arrow and Flash and Titans, and so Constantine shows up, and
so
maybe we've got Dr. Fate by then.
So basically Marvel has MCU and the Fox continuity. DC will have the TV continuity and the cinematic continuity.
Yeah. I really would like to see a crossover with Flash. Barry brings such levity. Do you remember in Arrow?
Yeah.
Crossover when he zipped over to Nanda Parbat and he goes, "You guys have a dungeon?"
Yeah. Well, and I think that's one of the reasons, like I said, I think that's one of the reasons why Arrow is going with a lighter tone in season four to make it easier for all of them to cross over. I think the crossover with Arrow Flash this year, you saw really distinct differences between the tones of the two different shows. Mm-hmm. And I think going forward, since they've said, we're going to do a crossover every year, that a lighter tone for Arrow is going to make it a more comfortable fit. And I think also it lays the groundwork for Supergirl to cross over because the tone is the same as in the Flash.
Right.
And I have a feeling that Titans is probably going to be a little bit more toward the Arrow tone, only not as dark. And that's going to make it easier for Titans to cross over into Arrow. And Legends of Tomorrow is going to be that lighter tone that Flash and Supergirl have. So all of those, I think Arrow right now is the only one that doesn't fit. Mm-hmm. So they have to lighten that one up in order to get it on the same level as all the rest of it and make it easier to cross over.
Well, in the comic book continuities, they've been able to cross over pretty well.
Oh, sure.
Different characters.
Yeah.
It's all comic.
See, I don't think that they're going to make. They're going to lighten Arrow up, but they're not going to make it as light.
They're not going to
make it anywhere near as light because they lose the opportunity to have the contrast.
Right. Well, and I'm not saying they're going to make it as light. I'm saying they're just going to make it lighter than it is now in order to make it easier to cross over.
So it's not
easier to watch.
Yeah. Because it's really, really, really a stark contrast. And sometimes it works, but if you get into the overall, if you cross over into all of these other stories, it might be a little bit easier if Green Arrow is not quite so grimdark.
And your comic book fans are kind of used to seeing these crossover type of things, but when you get your average audiences that they're trying to get their viewership,
would
probably be a little bit more shocked by the contrast.
And our average audience is probably not shocked that we've gone very long.
or digressed.
But yeah, well, you know, at least, though, all of our digressions stayed within the DC Comics universe.
Right.
That's the thing, is sometimes, you know, we can go way off somewhere, off in the wherever. Okay, but that's going to wrap it up for this time. We are very excited to see what happens with Supergirl. The trailer that's out now for Global Network, I think it's probably a Canada channel or something that is out there, is much closer to the tone of the actual pilot. Those of you who haven't seen it yet, I'm personally saying it's definitely worth the watch. It does set up some interesting questions for the rest of the season that I'm interested in seeing play out. And we, of course, will discuss that and everything else DC in the Rogues Gallery as we move forward. I want to thank everybody here on the panel tonight. Sonia Rodriguez in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Thank you.
And Jeff Hackworth in Fort Worth, Texas.
Thank you, thank you.
Chris Jensen off in the other side of the city.
Thank you, thank you.
Oh, that's who it is. Yeah, what happened there?
I don't know.
I think he's doing a little cyborg thing there. Tim Harvey by phone in parts unknown.
Yeah.
And,
always a pleasure.
Here in the studio, Dan Hanley.
First time on the Rogues Gallery and enjoyed it.
Yes. Thank you for joining us. And thank you, folks, for listening. And as always, we do welcome your comments. You can leave that or send us an email, roguesgallery@scififorme.com. You can join us on all the social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, Tumblr. I did it. I got it.
Without the cheat sheet?
Without the cheat sheet.
Awesome.
And I didn't remember. I didn't forget any of them.
Awesome.
Okay, and you can leave us your thoughts if you've seen the pilot or if you're anticipating the pilot, things that you want to see, things that you don't want to see, things that just got you all excited about Supergirl. And we will be back with another episode of the Rogues Gallery very soon here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Thanks very much for joining us. We will be back.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.